must be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag, so we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked off to look for a man.
Welcome to the Rant and Rave podcast, a production of Rogue Machine Theater. I'm your host, Sarah Fenton. Lots happening this month at Rogue Machine. Sam Hunter's Pocatello, directed by John Perrin Flynn, is in its final weekend, and our co-production of Dirt, directed by Anne Bronston, continues through the end of the month at the Raven Playhouse in North Hollywood. Visit roguemachinetheater.com to find out more about these two shows, as well as our upcoming fundraising gala, April 30th, called What I Do for Love, celebrating our passion for acting. That will be an evening of live music, open bar, scenes, songs, and of course a silent auction. This month, we bring you stories of adventure, from foreign exchange students to destination weddings, treasure hunts, and encounters with nudists overseas. But first, a story a little closer to home, the adventure of battling your own demons. Here's Ron Batita to introduce our first writer.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Rogue Machine's Rant and Rave. Andy DeCastro is the former director of global production for Steven Spielberg's Holocaust documentary project, The Shoah Foundation, and currently a grateful recovering crystal addict. He is also a freelance writer who maintains a recovery blog entitled Shortly After Takeoff, and his work has been published in magazines that include The Advocate, The Fight, and Top Agent. Ladies and gentlemen, Andy DeCastro.
Can Andrew read mine? No, okay. Okay. November 2006. It's 6 a.m. and I'm sitting at my computer staring bug-eyed at hardcore porn and jerking off, as I've been doing for the past 6 hours, pretty much nonstop. These marathon masturbation sessions are part of the Faustian deal I've made with the crystal meth devil, unrelenting hypersexuality in exchange for any possibility of achieving orgasm. I startle at a noise in the doorway and see my husband Patrick, unexpectedly awake, staring at me with eyes that register disappointment and sadness. My pipe and my stash of meth are out of sight in the desk drawer, but I'm pretty certain he knows I've relapsed again. Of course he does. He's been through this for 6 years now. The overdoses, the psychosis, the lying, the cheating, the stealing, and of course the sexual compulsions. He doesn't get angry. Instead, he says calmly, "You're taking a drug test." "Okay, sure," I reply just as calmly, but immediately try to buy myself some time by adding, "But I just peed. Maybe we can do it a little bit later?" He regards me for a moment, silently, and then returns to the bedroom. So, once again, I'm confronted with the primary catch-22 of all recalcitrant drug addicts. Objecting to a drug test is a tacit admission of guilt, while taking the fucking test will provide solid proof of it. I hear the creak of bed springs, and I know that if I'm lucky, Patrick will sleep for a couple more hours, and if I'm luckier, he'll sleep past noon, which he's been known to do on some days. I know I'm about to be kicked out of the house again, and the thought of having to sleep outdoors or in my drug dealer's filthy apartment or, God forbid, yet another rehab, sends a surge of panic through me, and I rack my brain to figure a way out of this. My thoughts go to the cardboard box in Patrick's desk, full of mail-order drug testing kits. You know, one would think that when their partner is ordering meth tests in bulk from Amazon, it might be time to get serious about recovery. Clearly, you'd be wrong. Perhaps I can sabotage one of those little dipsticks of impending doom and figure out a way to make those two lines representing a negative result appear. A fine-point Sharpie could work, provided Patrick doesn't first look at the test strip before dipping it in the plastic cup of urine. Too risky, I decide, and begin trying to think up another plan. Our three dogs, Jane, Steve, and Sherman, are now awake and rubbing against my legs, needing to be let outside to pee. As I walk toward the kitchen to release them into the backyard, the idea arrives, fully formed, stunning in its simplicity. They want to be let outside to pee. Hang on, I say, opening a cupboard above the microwave, retrieving a small Tupperware bowl, then moved to the sliding glass door that opens to the backyard. I let Jane out first, deftly using my leg to impede Steve and Sherman, trapping them inside. I followed Jane, a small rust-colored spaniel, into the yard, dilated eyes squinting against the assault of the morning light. Jane bolts for the lawn to the right side of the pool, and I hurry after her. I stay just a few feet behind her as she sniffs the lawn, circling, stopping, changing her mind, moving to a new spot. After several false starts, she assumes her peeing posture. Quickly, I squat beside her, trying to wedge the edge of the plastic bowl under her hindquarters. She startles at the intrusion, however, looking back at me with an expression of obvious irritation, scuttling away before releasing even a single drop. We repeat this awkward routine several times before she makes a mad dash for the other side of the pool, where she squats and with panicked, backward-looking eyes staring right at me, relieves herself before I can reach her. Damn it, Jane, bad dog, I snap at her, before heading back to the sliding door for attempt number two, leaving Jane to ponder where the fuck she's supposed to pee, if not inside or outside. I choose Sherman next, cursing my drug-fogged mind for not realizing earlier that, obviously, duh, catching the urine of a large male dog in a Tupperware bowl would be far less complicated than catching the urine of a small female one. Sherman the Akita, twitchy from holding his bladder, barrels out of the house and past me the minute I slide the door open, and Steve, a low-slung black-and-white terrier mix, manages to bulldoze his way between Sherman's legs and makes it outside, too. Steve heads to one side of the pool, and Sherman veers off to the other. I make a quick decision and take off after Sherman, holding my bathrobe closed with one hand, clutching the plastic bowl in the other and cursing, knowing that two options for dog pee collection have probably been reduced to one. Stubbing my bare foot on the uneven brick of the patio, I unleash a torrent of profanity. I catch up to Sherman, who is sniffing around the overgrown tangle of vines lining the lawn, but for all his enthusiasm in getting the fuck out here, he's annoyingly slow at getting to the point. I'm stalking him from behind, trying to appear casual and uninterested, when I spy Steve across the yard begin to lift his leg at the base of a large rose bush. Quickly calculating the distance, I make a decision and race toward him, bowl held out in front of me like a relay racer preparing to hand off his baton. I've miscalculated, however, and by the time I've traversed the length of the yard, the bush is dripping urine, and Steve toddles off back toward the house, blissfully unaware that he has just totally fucked me. I do a quick about face and begin sprinting back to Sherman, who is now watering the lawn with his own impressive stream of precious meth-free urine. I'm almost at him, bowl outstretched, bathrobe flapping behind my lube shining nakedness like giant plaid wings, when I notice two neighbors on the road above our hillside home, out for an early morning walk, silently surveying the Fellini-esque scene below them, eyes wide and mouths agape, watching the freak of Mount Washington in yet another virtuoso performance, almost as compelling as the time the police were called because I was trying to knock shadow people off the roof of a different neighbor's house with a power washer at 3 a.m., wearing only a jockstrap. Bolting for the cover of our gazebo, I wait another few minutes until I'm certain my audience has moved on, and then screech out another fuck, hurling the Tupperware bowl into the yard. As I head inside to formulate yet another plan, a phrase I've read in the AA Big Book during several of my failed attempts at rehab materializes in my head. I don't remember all of it, only the words that describe addiction as pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. Those words stay with me the entire day. Those words are there 10 minutes later while I'm composing a Craigslist ad offering to buy clean urine for $50. They're there with me as I retrieve cash from an ATM. They are there 20 minutes after that while I'm driving on the 101 to Van Nuys. And they are still there, in the stranger's shag-carpeted living room, scattered with children's toys and a picture of white Jesus on the wall, while the bearded, overweight man holds a mason jar in front of him, aiming a stream of piss into it. "What kind of sick fuck," he asks with disgust, "pays someone for their piss?" He's taking his time, drawing this out, clearly enjoying my humiliation. I say nothing. "Are you a sick fuck?" he asks sneeringly over the sound of bubbling urine. I hang my head, clenching the cash in my hand, wanting to run, but knowing that I can't without that jar and its vile yet incredibly valuable contents. "Well, are you?" His voice fades as the noise of 6 years of pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization begin to swell in my head, a cacophony of regret, humiliation, depravity, sirens wailing, handcuffs clicking, screaming psych patients, abscesses draining, my husband's tearful pleading, and loudest of them all, the sound of my mother crying. Then, like the sudden jarring silence, When Dorothy's house drops from the tornado, the noise in my head stills. And it's just the bearded stranger again. Answer me. Are you? Are you a sick fuck? I recognize immediately that the question is no longer rhetorical, and I think to myself, God help me. Yes, I am, I say finally, my eyes filling with tears, shame and sudden clarity washing over me. I am a sick fuck. I am a very, very sick fuck. Thank you.
That was Andy Nicastro on Adventure. Visit roguemachinetheater.com for an archive of all of our past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Rogue Machine Theater. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week when we travel to France for an adventure in cognac. Rant and Rave, the podcast, is a production of Rogue Machine Theater. Our executive producers are John Polono and myself, Sarah Fenton. Our guest co-producer this month is Mary Jo Smith. Series producer is Daniel Goodman, webmaster is Amanda Maurer, and our podcast theme music is by Heartbreak and Nadestrom. I'm Sarah Fenton. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Yeah.